Welcome to the TEEP podcast, brought to you by CECO and UH Energy. We'll give you the latest in industrial energy efficiency in 15 minutes or less. Our upcoming events, first up, Kooks for Energy Hackathon. This is happening on the 21st and 22nd at the Student Center South here at the University of Houston. It's going to be a really great event. I actually get to mentor a couple of the student groups. And, you know, they come up with some great ideas, great both being in very workable and quite amusing. So I invite people to come along and take a look at those. We have the Power Hour Social from the Energy Coalition. This is their year-end social. It's on Thursday, December the 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. Take a look at our calendar for the location. And of course, there's the Energy in Action Seminar Series. The next one is Amplifying AI Impacts in Fuel and Petrochemical Industries. This will be held Tuesday, December the 9th from 4 to 6 at the University of Houston, the Student Center South, in the Bayou City Room. This should be a really interesting one from Lurbison. Okay, next, let's have a recap of the past webinars. Carla, what have you seen?
Thank you, Gary. So let me tell you, I feel so inspired and smarter after seeing these webinars, which is a big difference from that last podcast where I was having a little trouble finding some.
Right.
In one session, the UH inventors discussed three major innovations. The first is modular electrochemical carbon capture system, which replaces energy-intensive thermal generation. It's smaller, more efficient, and it could drop the capture cost to below $50 per ton. Second is a high-performance superconducting tape that carries hundreds times more than copper. And it's opening a door to ultra-efficient power cables and motors and even fusion magnets. And the third is a new sodium-ion batteries with non-flammable electrolytes that have fast charge performance, which are promising a lower cost for this, and they're a better option for the grid storage. You own a Tesla. I believe they use lithium-ion batteries. Sodium batteries seem promising for grid storage. And
You're right. The sodium batteries have a tremendous promise, and the fact that it's a low flammability is great. But in all honesty, they're a lot heavier than the lithium-ion, so I really don't think we're going to see it for cars. But, you know, for grid storage, batteries is the latest trend in Texas, and it's fabulous. It really helps with the transition hours. So I think we're going to see a lot more of the sodium batteries in that application. Yeah. So I'm going to make one more comment about those webinars. They're listed as energy transition, but let's be honest, these were all fantastic energy efficiency ideas that came through. They may be part of energy transition, but they're really helping with energy efficiency as well.
Yeah, for sure. They're awesome. So moving on to the next webinar, they showcased breakthrough materials, a graphene aerogel sorbent that captures CO2 and converts it directly into solid carbonate. He also talked about a new porous material that can store hydrogen near ambient conditions, and a full-spectrum solar thermal system that is capable of 24/7 heat storage.
Yeah, those all sound interesting. I actually missed that webinar, but I'm going to be checking out the recording based on some of the comments you've just made.
And Gary, you might recognize this name, Dr. Mike Harold.
Oh, my advisor.
So his session was on hydrogen production. He introduced a new electrically heated steam methane reforming process. And this is by replacing combustion with dual heating using a zirconia-supported catalyst. The system actually becomes more efficient with a surprisingly electrocatalytic boost that increases the methane conversion and reduces the CO2 intensity.
Yeah, this is fascinating technology. I've talked to a few of the researchers on it, and they're seeing some things that were quite unexpected. This will be a great area of further fundamental study, And maybe we'll even see these in commercial operation. I wonder if we know someone in tech transfer who can help with that.
I had a question about it. So the electrically heated SMR showed an ignition-like jump in performance. Why does this zirconia matter?
That is going to be the subject of some really good fundamental studies because, as you said, it was unexpected. If you think, well, you're just replacing conventional fired heaters with electric coils, what difference could that make? Well, it makes a big difference. Maybe it has something to do with the magnetic flux, but we'll see.
Do you think that the electric heating could realistically replace fired furnaces in the hydrogen production over the next decade?
That's tough because, as we've seen, it costs a lot of money to make electricity in most conditions. Using a thermal electric generation to produce electricity, then to turn it back into heat, that's a tough one. So we'll see. Those were some great webinars that we had. I'd like to make a few comments on a session that I went to. It was actually the Texas Energy Symposium. It was November the 4th to 6th at the Texas State Building in Austin. The theme of the summit was reliable, affordable, and clean. And this theme came up several times in just about all of the talks, and it was a very consistent thing. But one of the interesting things that I caught on there was the difference between resiliency and reliability. So resiliency is defined by the Argonne National Laboratories and the Department of Defense as being able to be self-sustaining for water and energy for 14 days. That's actually a pretty tough hurdle to meet, but there's a lot of communities. There are communities, there are churches, hospitals, fire stations, and police stations that are looking to be resilient. And this is just a fantastic idea. And I know we have CenterPoint as our provider in this area, but between ERCOT and CenterPoint, they're really calling for having these mini grids going.
Yeah, and that's important because we need to keep the hospitals and the where the elderly live in case of blackouts.
And 14-day resiliency, I think, is a good standard to have. The other thing that came up was interesting. Again, with the resiliency, it was a question, do you put in enough supply to meet the demand as you see it, or do you improve or do you reduce the demand by improving the energy efficiency? And study after study has shown that it pays to go with the energy efficiency to reduce the amount that you have to supply. There were a few dissenters, but really energy efficiency was one of the keys to making those things work. One of the other things that came up that was interesting was a quote that I'm going to use here. It says, pay for today's project with tomorrow's energy savings. This is all about financing. And the financing of energy efficiency programs is an interesting subject. There were many speakers there. Take a look at our newsletter and tune into the SPEER webinars. There's a lot more on that. In fact, we may even have a person as a guest on one of our upcoming podcasts to talk more about that financing. The last thing I want to mention is the impact of data centers. Again, a big subject there because Texas is going to have a lot of data centers coming up, using all of the so-called spare or excess gas production that we have. This has a lot of implications on the grid and whatnot, but that's a subject for another talk. So next up, we have a fantastic article on the different colors of hydrogen. Hisham, tell me about the different colors of hydrogen.
It's interesting to take a deep look into the colors of hydrogen, knowing that hydrogen is a colorless gas. But these colors of hydrogen are more of just an organized way and to understand the production methods for hydrogen. There are roughly 10, and new ones could be coming about soon.
Okay, so it's really just a classification method.
Most of the colors that have come out since, you know, the 2000s. All the conventional methods were the brown, black, or gray hydrogen. But since the late 1900s, we had blue hydrogen. But in the 2000s, we've had at least like 5 or 6 different colors, new production methods. While there's still novel and still in their beginning stages, they do seem to be the pathway forward for the, in one of the sources I cited, the renewable energy era.
Okay, so tell us about the conventional carbon-based ones first.
So yeah, the conventional carbon-based ones would be the brown or black hydrogen. I found it really interesting to learn that there are different ranks of coal, and there's bituminous coal or lignite coal. The coal that you use does matter in the efficiency that you have with a production of hydrogen.
So the coal-based is primarily the old-fashioned from Germany and South Africa and now China. China's big on coal-based, aren't they?
Yeah, they are massive. They are the largest producer of hydrogen by brown or black hydrogen. And then we have the conventional method, which is more popular in the United States. Roughly 95% of hydrogen production in the U.S. is by gray hydrogen using natural gas. And then we have...
Yeah, that's all the steam methane reforming, as we were talking about in the earlier.
Yeah, and steam methane reforming is very popular. It's the most considered to be the most conventional method, at least in the U.S. But then we have blue hydrogen, which takes that steam methane reforming, takes gray hydrogen a step further and does carbon capture. So that adds new technologies to gray hydrogen, but it's in the pathway forward to a renewable energy era.
Yeah, but it does add to the costs and reduces the overall efficiency because energy has to go into it and capital has to go into it.
Of course, yeah. You know, it does take more. So the levelized cost of hydrogen would for sure be higher for blue hydrogen as opposed to gray. But that CO2 that is captured from the blue hydrogen production method could takes somewhat of the cost off as you can reuse that carbon for other things. And then we also have the several other methods such as green hydrogen, which is essentially just any process that is a net zero carbon emission. Then we have yellow, and then we have the trio of red, pink, and purple, all coming from nuclear reactors, each of them with their own individual processes. And then the most unique one, yeah, at least the most unique process, would be turquoise hydrogen. And then lastly, we have, infamous from our last podcast, the white and gold hydrogen. And it is the newest, as geologists or geophysicists have discovered, that there is a lot of hydrogen that is in the ground. And the, you know, the challenge would be, how do you extract it? Hydrogen is not exactly a liquid just waiting to be sucked up. It poses a challenge.
Yeah, it is very challenging, but our friends in petroleum engineering, I think, are very excited about this possibility, being able to reuse their drilling expertise to find an alternate source of energy. So these different hydrogen colors or sources of hydrogen have different energy inputs. Did you find any consistency in the analysis there? I bet you didn't.
Because a lot of these new methods, especially for anything past green hydrogen, anything more novel than that, so yellow, red, pink, purple, and turquoise, hasn't shown to be too precise. There's a lot that could potentially be missing in the basis or the assumptions in analysis. But overall, it gives a good general idea of it, but it does require more thorough in-depth analysis to really understand the discrepancies down to the last penny between all these methods.
Yeah, I also saw that there was a wide band that you had to report on the costs. They're not from the same basis. So I think this is going to be a little bit more work, especially when it comes to energy efficiency of it. Again, there's not very consistent data on that, not very consistent analysis. So I think we have another task for you, another mission for you.
Yep.
Coming up, maybe not the next podcast, but certainly the next newsletter, we will have a more in-depth analysis on the energy efficiency of different hydrogen sources. So that's it for today. We must thank the State Energy Conservation Offices for the grant that allows all of this to happen, the Media Lab here at the University of Houston, and our interns, Carla Romero and Hisham Habli. Thank you very much for your work this last couple of weeks, and for the rest of the semester, I'm going to keep you working hard. And that's it. So we'll be back in two weeks from now for another 15 minutes on industrial energy efficiency.